Welcome everybody back to Vale of Sound. And yes, you have seen correctly. We do not have a regular metal guy sitting down to chat with us. I'm very happy to have James, or Ghost, however you want to call him, here on the show. So James, first of all, thanks for joining.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And it's also a pleasure to talk with somebody whose music, at first glance, it's not riff-based, because, of course, you know, like, being metalheads here at the Vale of Sound, we usually have those, but it's also interesting to stir things up a little bit. And that is also one of my first questions. What is the basis for your music? Is it really only the synth, or do you compose the stuff differently?
I would say it started out as, you know, strictly synth-based, because I was kind of, you know, I played in metal bands up until Ghost. And so I was kind of tired of it. I was rejecting it. And then the electronic community really didn't latch on to what we were doing. The metal community, you know, Blood Music signed me and Perturbator, Dan Terminus, Hollywood Burns. So it just kind of naturally, you know, once a metalhead, I guess always a metalhead. I can't get away from it.
So then the songs for Prophecy, the new record, is that like based on both elements, on synth and on the guitar?
Yeah, for this record, I kind of wanted to revisit some of the earlier, you know, like Behemoth and Possessor, and combine it with some of the newer things I did on the last two records. So it's a mixture for sure.
There are also moments when I think that is audible, and I like that approach to music. Something that I think you will have heard in a number of various kinds of questions, but it's always the same. I think the music that you make, it is somehow sparkly and at the same time also very shadowy. In a way, you know, like there are lots of dark places in the mix and there are lots of shiny elements in it. Is that something that is important for you to have this like contradiction?
Yeah, I mean, since my mixes are extremely, you know, like bricked, they're very, fatiguing. So I try to put valleys in places and things like that to kind of, you know, give your brain a break, your ears a break.
So it's not just for us, I guess. It's also for you, right? It keeps the thing interesting for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because that is something that, you know, happens often, I think, with a lot of musicians, that they do the same thing over and over again. They do it very well, but at some point, the fatigue sets in. You have been busy. You have been releasing records over the last, I don't know how many years, and it's always more or less a two-year basis that you release new stuff. How do you escape from that fatigue?
Well, I mean, I just try to, the longer I've done this, the more I've tried to pull in other influences rather than just, you know, like the 80s synth stuff and horror movies. So, I mean, I try to be as creative as possible without, you know, completely, you know, abandoning, you know, what it was to begin with.
Does it happen that sometimes you create a song or you start working on something and you realize, oh, that doesn't fit Ghost?
Maybe a couple of times. Usually when I start a track, I finish it and it ends up on the record. That's just kind of how my brain works. I can't leave something unfinished.
So you first got to finish something and then go on to the next track?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. One track at a time.
Okay. That is very interesting because a lot of musicians, especially from the electronic side of things, they always say like, okay, I have like a vast archive on which I can go back to and, you know, pull things out of my treasure chest. So you don't have a lot of loose songs lying around.
No, I maybe have like a handful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's just
that is very interesting. You go ahead.
It's just because, adding so many parts to these songs and everything, it takes a lot of focus. And for me, if I put my, if I string myself out among a few different songs at once, then they're all gonna suffer because of how detail-oriented everything is. And because I'm doing the mixing and the mastering and everything else along with writing the songs, that's just kind of how I keep everything organized.
Do you also think that this approach helps the, for lack of a better word, highly diverse character of the songs?
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, I can focus fully on one track at a time. And, I usually start with like an idea of kind of where a track's going to head. And then by the time I'm halfway through the track, it's going in a bunch of different directions than what I initially planned on. So, yeah. I mean, doing one at a time gives me time to like slow down, focus, and kind of keep the track, each track, more in line with where I want it to go.
I can imagine that being a good approach working for you. Cool. I like that. It's also interesting when you talk about it, then it makes me think about the lengths of the tracks on Prophecy. If we take away the intro, then the shortest track is something shortly longer than 2.5 minutes, and the longest one is a little bit over five, if I remember correctly. Has that also to do with focusing on one thing, not spreading it out too long, not trudging it along for 7, 8, 9 minutes?
I feel like my music is so abrasive and it's pretty heavy. I feel like a 9 minute ghost song would be kind of insane. I feel I've always liked electronic to stay in between, like 2 to 4.5 minutes. That just feels better for me. I mean, even with metal, there's something about some of the doom bands that do these like 15-minute songs that I don't know why it's always just kind of been difficult for me to latch onto on that long, because either it's the same riff for 9 minutes or I don't know, I lose interest in super long songs most of the time. Some bands do it really well.
So then a band like a concert by one of our favorite bands here, Bellwitch, would probably be a horror to you with songs that like each album is basically just one track, 85 minutes. That would be horror for James, right?
No, they do it. They do it well.
Yeah. But I know what you mean. I can see that. And yes, I can also see that the contrary element in Ghost, it's very driven music in a way. And driven was also something that came up in my mind when I was listening to it. I remembered a movie from, I think, like 15 years ago, where one character says, after the record has been recorded and everything has been produced, first thing he says, like, okay, let's now do the ultimate test, the car. And they put it onto, they quickly burn it onto a CD and then put it in a car stereo. Is it also that you do? Are there certain checks that you make before, like releasing it?
Yeah, I definitely listen to it. I have the headphones I mix on, which are like Sennheiser HD 225, I think. And then I use AirPods. I have some Sony AirPod type things. And then I definitely use like my wife's car, my car, as many places as I can to kind of get it, where it sounds as close to the same as possible, or no matter where you listen to it, which never, it's impossible, but you can get close.
What happens if you all of a sudden sit in the car and something that sounded awesome on your headphones sounds shitty in the car? What do you do then?
I immediately go back to work.
So you then twist and tweak it as long as it's
Oh
as close to
yeah, I
what
mean
you want?
I would say that probably takes longer than actually writing the songs, is getting the mix and everything to sit right.
When you record and then mix the thing, are you thinking of stuff like surround sound stereos or only headphones?
I never really think about surround sound, but it would probably be fine because I do a lot of panning work, you know, to make, because the mixes are so compressed, I have to pan and move things around so that everything has a place in the mix and doesn't get completely lost. So I don't necessarily have it in mind, but it should work because I'm working on a basically a 180 degree of panning, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So you've got, you know, I can put instruments from here all the way to here in your ears. So
I have to ask a friend of mine who has a very, very good stereo. And I have to ask him if we can sit down and listen to Prophecy, because I think there are a lot of things that you don't hear on the headphones where they are exactly placed. I think that's also something that the record does very well. It keeps pushing interest. When you've already said it, you first have to finish something. But I'm also pretty sure that there are moments when you start something and you notice this doesn't go anywhere. How long do you try to keep pushing? Like, I will find a way to make this work.
I would say usually no more than a few hours. I've had a few tracks that didn't work out, and that's probably how long I spent on them. I mean, I need things to be like creatively coming pretty quickly before, or I get bored. And so, yeah, I mean, there's probably a few that I have laying around that are unfinished that
But
it's like the first 45 seconds of a track.
Oh yeah. So you take like, I see what you mean. You mean like that there is a certain amount of seconds that you need for knowing, okay, this is going to work or not. Cool. I've never heard it that way, but I can imagine. Yeah. When listening to Prophecy, it also once again becomes clear that you at least seem to have a very eclectic taste in music. Is that correct?
Yeah, man. I'm constantly changing genres. I listen to, you know, anything from, I was born in Texas, so I listen to a lot of the old country, you know, the glory days, like George Jones and all those guys, Waylon Jennings, the guys that were fucking hitting the bottle hard, and like they were living like rock stars. It's interesting to like go down that rabbit hole. And then, yeah, I mean, I listen to, you know, there's some hip hop I enjoy. It's a small amount, but there is some I enjoy. And then of course, you know, electronic, pop, metal, and metal has infinite subgenres. So it's kind of hard to explore all that anyways.
So what was the last rabbit hole you went to down along?
Right now I've been listening to that band Street Sex. I think they're from Austin, actually, Texas. But yeah, I've been like obsessed with them for the last couple weeks.
Okay. So do you then also go down the rabbit hole in the sense that you try to listen to everything a band has put out?
If I like the band, yeah, definitely. If I, you know, if it's something that really catches me, and you know, if I'm listening to a song more than once a day, then yeah, I'm going to go through their catalog and see, you know, exactly how, just to see how much great songs they've created.
Mm-hmm. But you don't keep like a list of stuff. You just follow the instinct and the ear, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me guess, you're one of the people, including me, I also include myself in that. You listen to a lot of streaming, don't you?
Yep, 100%. I mean, it's kind of hard not to nowadays.
True.
I mean, if I bought every album I listened to, I'd be broke.
Yeah, same here.
There's so many bands. There's so many good bands.
Yeah, and I'd be divorced as well.
Yeah, probably the same for me.
But do you then also go along and buy stuff if you really like something?
Yeah. I think the way that I support other artists the most is by, you know, like I'll buy their merch or physical records. I hardly ever buy or download an album. You know, I mean, I've got so much shit on my phone as it is that I barely have any room for everything that's on there, and I don't have a dedicated, you know, like wave player or whatever, just stacked with tracks.
But it's interesting because that's something that a lot of people out there forget. Bands make most money either from you going to a show or from buying the merch, because that is something that a lot of people forget. And here we can also come to you and to Ghost. I mean, the project has some kind of stylistic appeal. I mean, like, I don't want to ask if you like Ghost Rider, a comic figure.
Oh, the show?
No, the cartoon figure, the Marvel guy.
I was a huge fan when I was probably between like 8 and 10 years old, 6 and 10, something like that, yeah.
But that has not influenced your choice of stylistic attire.
No, the original idea was that since the music comes from, you know, it's very based in like 80s horror movies, it was originally that the skull mask was like the ghost is a slasher from a movie type thing, and the skull mask is like the first victim.
But coming back to the merch and to the attire, is that also something that you yourself like to control? What kind of merch is being produced? What it looks like? What color are the t-shirts? Yeah. Which t-shirt itself?
Yeah, I mean, you can only have so much control if you're not making it yourself. You have to rely on the artists that you work with. But yeah, I mean, I work directly with every artist that creates anything for me.
Is that important for you, like artistic control?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know why. I don't know if I'd get anything out of it if I gave up any control like that, like over the visuals and the sounds. It would be very difficult for, well, I mean, I say that I did on Valediction work with Jamie Gomez, and he did a little bit of work with me in the studio, so I had to relinquish a bit of control. It wasn't fun.
it wasn't fun. Okay.
No, I mean, I love Jamie or Jaime, however he prefers to pronounce his name, but it's very difficult for me to let anyone into the project because it's been me since the beginning. You know what I mean? You kind of get tunnel vision on things.
Is Ghost then also some kind of reaction on you having been in bands and, you know, being in a band, even if it's only a duo, it always needs compromise, right? And now you can decide everything yourself. Is that also one of the reasons for doing this?
Yeah, that was the deciding factor. That's why I started making music on a computer, because I was, you know, tired of compromising, tired of working with people that were unreliable, that weren't as, you know, they weren't as focused as me. They didn't care as much about it, in my opinion. Like, I've been obsessive about music since I can remember, so it's probably difficult to find anyone. I've actually found more people that are like me since I started doing this as kind of a full-time thing. Like, everyone I meet that does it, that tours, that produces records on a regular basis, they're all completely consumed with it and very controlling.
As you are already talking about tours, are there any kind of tour news that you can already disclose at this point for the new record?
There's one in October that's 99% for sure. It'll be a support run in Europe. And then I'm probably doing a headline run in the U.S. and it's just in the idea phase. We're talking about South America, so we'll see how it all comes together.
When you are talking about touring, I mean, like, you have a lot of experience as a touring artist. Which places, and you don't have to say cities, and you don't have to say clubs, but which countries surprised you the most, and which places did you like best?
Surprised me. I would say like Poland and the Czech Republic are always a surprise because it just seems you know, it's pretty far east for someone like me from Texas or whatever. So I guess that was always Poland specifically is always a surprise. I mean, people turn out and they go really hard. And I would say Australia was a big surprise as well. Just the country as a whole. I had a blast. And then, of course, I like, you know, the States. I'm just comfortable here.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, it's home turf, right?
Yeah.
You've hinted at influences. And I mean, like, there are some more or less obvious influences in the music, of course. You know, like 80s stuff, synth pop, pop in general. But were there any special influences on Prophecy?
Yeah, I mean, Ministry was a big influence on this record. Let me think. Of course, Depeche Mode is always, that's an obvious reference. They're always an influence. I've liked them since I was a little tiny kid. I'm trying to think if there were any weird ones. I really think, you know, Front 242, I pulled off a lot of the earlier industrial type stuff for this record. It's pretty obvious. Frontline Assembly, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Depeche Mode is, I mean, like, obviously one of the first things. There are moments on the record where I feel as if I hear the same hammering beat that you also hear on, for example, Master and Servant, which is a cool thing, you know, like that sound being able to take you back nearly 40 years by now. Yeah, I can see that. Now we also have to talk a little bit about the title and the topic of the record, Prophecy. Prophecy can be a good thing. It can also have the negative effect of self-fulfilling prophecy, and whatever we want to call it. But is this your comment on the time that we are in right now, 2024?
Yeah, I would say, without getting, you know, like, too deep into it and politics.
Oh, we like going deep here. Wherever you want to go, go there.
Well, I just kind of want to avoid it because I'm sick of hearing about it and talking about it. But when I was writing the record, it was like deep into, like, I was like on the internet too much, paying attention to all the bullshit, the dissenting voices. And, you know, when you walk around in the world, everything that you see online and in the news, it just doesn't exist. Like, people here aren't fighting each other over fucking politics. But if you look at Twitter, you would think that. So when I was writing the record, I was definitely into what was happening specifically here. And then, you know, I pay attention to what happens around the world through friends and stuff. So I'm definitely conscious of it. And here in the States, there is a certain sect of Christianity that's kind of, you know, overstepping again and trying to get involved in other people's business. And that reminds me of being, you know, a child in the 80s and Satanic Panic and all that. It's starting to feel similar. So yeah, I mean, when I was writing the record, it's definitely coming from like the Christian perspective of Armageddon, the end of days. And I was feeling that way, but like I said, it's probably because I was online too much.
Well, yeah, but I think even if you look outside the window, I think there are a lot of moments when you think like, okay, the four riders are deaf, are slowly but surely approaching. We will not get into politics because, I know that talking about politics is like talking about food. Everybody has an argument. Everybody has an idea, but no arguments. At least not until you talk like to real political scientists, and they do. I would still love to talk with any political scientist who is also interested in music. So if there are the nerds out there, hit us up. However, you know, what also struck me was the idea of Nostradamus, you know, like making a prophecy that nobody is able to understand at first. And then in hindsight, you realize, okay, there might have been something. Is that something that you also felt like, okay, I'm making a prophecy, but I don't know whether it will turn out that way?
I mean, it's more of like a kind of not reality based and more based on it. This is the first, I usually write from like, you know, Satan and hell's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And on this one, I was feeling more like looking at things through the lens of the Bible and the Christian, you know, mythos and everything. So, it's definitely the first time I've done that, looking at things through, like, how would Jesus view the modern world? You know, if he was the Messiah and all of these things, how would he view what the world's become after his coming, you know, and trying to influence the world? So it's kind of a depressive look from the Christian perspective.
Yeah, already the fact that most people think he was white.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I don't know. People are crazy.
Would you consider yourself someone with a Christian belief?
No, I grew up Christian, and I'm in Texas, so there's churches everywhere. I mean, there's churches on every corner, sometimes two or three. Yeah. So it's just kind of the one religion that I deal with on a regular mm-hmm. basis. So it's the one that naturally I gravitate towards as far as like creating concepts and things like that mm-hmm. for records. I suppose if I lived in, you know, fucking the Middle East somewhere or something, then I would be focused on, you know, the Muslim religion.
Yeah.
It's just surrounding based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the concept that one is most familiar with, right?
Yeah.
When we look at the music that you make, of being of an electronic nature and mostly being composed on a computer, I have to ask the following way. What do you think of the rise of AI and ChatGPT and however, whichever notion we are at right now? How do you feel about the rise of artificial intelligence?
I'm not really that concerned with it currently. It's not, the technology's not there to really affect people, I don't think. I'm mm-hmm. sure it will be eventually, but probably not in our lifetimes. I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever really get past the human element of art. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think there'll always be enough people that are more interested in the human part of it than just mm-hmm. hearing a song that's good. I need the connection. Like I need there to be a person behind it. If I knew a computer created a certain image or a certain song, especially now with how the technology works by using a database influence, you know, just pulling from what it's searching. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could really enjoy it. It would be empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like you
said. So, I mean, I don't really have anything against the technology mm-hmm. yet, because I think it can be harnessed for good things, you know, like complex equations and shit that people need to figure out or whatever. But I don't know. I don't see it ever really infiltrating real art. I at least I hope not.
Yeah, and then the question is, if ever an AI is able to imitate that human element, you know, there are a lot of people who would say, like, a good imitation or a good robbery of art is better than a shitty self-composition. And therefore, I think, you know, if an AI was ever possible to do it, then we have to admit that that must be some really good AI.
Yeah, I would. If the AI was self-aware and had like feelings and goals, then I would be all about it. But as it stands right now, it's just an algorithm. It's not real.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and it's still imitating, right? That's true.
Yeah.
When we think of you as a performer, the first thing that came to my mind is like, how is the guy able to do a show very often or mostly or always with the mask on, being more or less the only one in the limelight, you know, the one that is sweating. So how do you go through these concerts? Is that like a physical stress for you? Probably, right?
Yeah. I ride my bike like 10 miles a day, 5 days a week. I stay as fit as I possibly can, especially leading up to a tour. I try to eat better and like not smoke too much, those kinds of things. So it's definitely physically demanding. You know, and I don't drink really anymore, so that helps. I used to sweat insanely because I would, you know, drink a fifth of whiskey before I went on stage, which was crazy. But yeah, so I mean, yeah, I mean, I stay as fit as possible, and I'm just always conscious of how difficult being on stage and everything, all the gear is.
Do you then also try to maintain a more or less healthy lifestyle while on tour?
Yeah, I mean, I as much as possible. You know, the hours are long, the days are late and early, so, and there's the food is horrible usually, so within reason.
Yeah, within reason and within possibilities, right? You know, sometimes things are limitless. Can you try to explain, or can you try to describe the feeling of you being on stage, standing in front of a crowd, and you see people going shit bat crazy listening to your stuff? How is that feeling for you?
Man, it's like it's just like an overload of joy, to be honest. It's there's no feeling like it when a crowd's with you. It's the best, because you know you're sharing instantly something that was intimate to you, that's intimate to the people that are enjoying it. So it's just, it feels like a hair-raising connection. You know, you get chills, and I'm smiling sometimes under the mask. But okay. Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, playing live is for me, that's what it's about, the instant connection with people that also enjoy similar things and what I've created.
Do you nowadays notice a difference between that experience on stage when Ghost is working compared to the former experience that you had in a band? Is there a difference?
There's a difference because more people care about what I'm doing now. I never really did that well in metal bands. So, I mean, I didn't have that many experiences, you know, with a full room of people. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely different, but only because of weird popularity, however things happen.
Well, that weird popularity is due to some kind of music that you make being more or less pretty good. Let me ask it this way. You know, like, I can imagine that the mask itself, as cool as it is it also sometimes an obstacle for you when you are on stage?
Yeah, the, you know, there's no expression, there's no eye contact, so it's a little more difficult to connect with people. Because I did, you know, a few years without the mask, which felt more intimate for sure. I definitely felt more in the moment. With the mask, it's strange because I can be reflective, you know, like I can totally just be internal. Because nobody can see my face, nobody can see what's happening with me emotionally. So sometimes during the set, I may be, you know, totally in my head because I can be. So it's definitely more difficult to get people to react in a way.
I was also thinking of whether it's an obstacle for you really playing the stuff, like performance-wise.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, some of the buttons and things that I use to perform pretty small. So I don't have much vision from here down. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's difficult. It's definitely difficult. Sometimes the lighting can be an issue, but it's nothing that's too extremely difficult. You know, I know the songs inside and out. I can basically play everything with my eyes closed.
Could you?
I said, I can basically play everything with my eyes closed now. So it's an obstacle, but it's nothing that's debilitating.
Although, yeah, I mean, like, why am I surprised? Because, you know, other musicians with normal, please see inverted commas, with normal instruments, they can also play their stuff with their eyes closed. It shouldn't come as a surprise. Yes. It is very interesting, you know, when you speak about the stuff that you like. You have mentioned hip hop, and you mentioned that you only like a little bit of it. But there are moments in your music when I think, like, oh, there is a little bit of hip hop in there, but I'm never able to figure out which kind of hip hop. So now my question is, if you listen to hip hop, is it more abstract stuff like Anti-Pop Consortium, Delac, or is it really the for lack of a better word, the mainstream kind of hip hop?
I like a lot of like the southern stuff, so it's pretty trash as far as like what it is, but the hooks are really good, the production's mm-hmm. really good. I feel a bit of like camaraderie just because of being from the same area as some of these artists. So I mean, I don't really like a lot of metaphysical deep hip hop. I don't know. I don't like to listen to music particularly to have moments of deep thought in that way. You know, I like to internalize what I'm thinking, and maybe I'm having a deep thought about something I'm going through, but I like to kind of use music as a way to forget about thinking, to forget mm-hmm. about being so deep in thought all the damn time.
Would that the ability to forget, would that then also be one of the best things that you can achieve for the audience? Giving them a moment to forget?
I hope so, yeah. I think that's what music is for me, and that's what it is. You know, performing live is probably the best blank out experience of you can have, because your nerves and everything are so on edge that you're not even there. You know, it's like the only time in my life that I don't really think is when I'm listening to a great song or I'm performing. So yeah, I hope I can provide that for people, because there's nothing quite like it. It's relaxing.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm very sure you have been to raves in your life. When you compare that experience with a regular rock concert or hardcore or metal concert, in retrospective, which one usually gave you the better experience, the raves or metal concerts?
Metal, for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not a rave guy.
Okay.
I don't like people touching me. I definitely experimented with rave type drugs and have been to raves for sure, but it's not really my vibe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like massages, things like that. I like my personal space, and raves aren't that way. You know, raves are, oh my God, this is.
Yeah. I don't know you, but let me get my face into your my hand into your face. Yes, yeah, I know.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. And then, interestingly, I think that Ghost would fit both ways. Although you probably don't think about being able to work in both ways at a rave and at a metal concert, right?
No, I mean, I've never had the opportunity, so I don't really think about it. I think a rave might be a bad idea for some of my songs. They're pretty abrasive. I can see people having a bad experience on acid or something.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck in a crowd with mm-hmm. blast beats playing. It's probably not the vibe.
Yeah, but, you know, so I think there's a purse for everything. So, James, first of all, thanks for all the insight. But, of course, nobody leaves the Veil of Sound interview without having to go through our quickfire round at the end. You will always get two alternatives and have to choose for which one, and give a short explanation, like why is OK Computer less of an important album than Kid A when it comes to Radiohead? And I know I will get a shitstorm for that, but
yeah, that's just the way I feel.
I feel Kid A is the revolutionary and OK Computer is the little child dragging on the shirt. Like, eh. But you know what I mean? You always get two alternatives and then have to choose. Let's start with a band that has been mentioned two or three times already, Depeche Mode. I'll give you two records and you please choose one of them. Some Great Reward versus Violator.
That's tough, man. I would say, you know, when I was younger, probably Violator, because it's mm-hmm. so catchy and it's kind of them coming into their own, really, I think. But Some Great Reward, as I've gotten older, I don't know, I like that, and For the Masses, for completely different reasons than I like Violator. The melodies are maybe better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little more raw. And Violator is just known by everyone. Everyone knows Personal Jesus, you know what I mean? And Depeche Mode is a massive act. So it's, but you know, you like to feel like some part of it is your own. And I feel like mm-hmm. less people know about Some Great Reward. So mm-hmm. I would definitely choose Some Great Reward over Violator.
Did you like the latest record, Memento Mori? Did you like that one?
It was okay. It's not really giving what I like from Depeche Mode, which is fine. I'm just one guy who cares. But I liked the more moody, you know, hard-hitting pop stuff that they did. Mm. There was like a short period there.
Do you think that it was a wise decision for them to go on without Andy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's difficult for me to say, because I know if I was in a band and someone, you know, passed away or something, I would definitely, it's hard to throw it all away, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm friends with the dudes in Power Trip and they're all struggling with that now after, you know, Riley died. So yeah. I don't really, you know, if I was in a full band, I would probably go on. So yeah, I think it's the only choice they really had.
Well, one of the commentaries that, or one thing that I read in a lot of commentaries was like, this is good music. And Memento Mori is a good album. And very often I've read things like, but maybe it should have been released under like Gayen and Gore or any other kind of name, not Depeche Mode. But they did it. It's a good record. And I can see why they did it, which is a cool thing. Another one of those 80s synth bands that is making a comeback is Pet Shop Boys. Again, I'll give you two records. Nightlife or Very?
You know, Pet Shop Boys is always a band that I've like listened to singles of. Mm-hmm. I'm not really a fan of any of their entire records. I'm a huge fan of Pet Shop Boys, but I think they've written maybe 10 or 15 tracks that are just undeniable. And then there's a lot of kind of them doing their own little noodling, whatever, being weirdos that they are. So I don't know if I could really choose a record, man. I would have to choose like maybe a song.
Okay. What is your favorite Pet Shop Boys song then?
Honestly, probably Domino Dancing. Ridiculous as it is, I love that the bass that comes from the what was that synth he used? Was the big sampler. Can't remember what it's called. But it's got that really hard-hitting short synth bass. It's like dum dum da dum. Like, I don't know, there's something about that noise that I can't get over. I love it.
Is that also, are these Pet Shop Boys songs also things that sometimes come to your mind when you write your own stuff? As you say, you're not like into the albums, but into the songs?
Yes, yeah. A lot of their sounds, for sure. Their bass sounds, a lot of their leads. They just have those noises that are special. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is very often a little bit more than just a simple bass sound. You also have already mentioned one of the two artists that I will give you next. Perturbator versus Carpenter Brut. And James, if you're listening, you know, don't worry. You know, whatever he says.
I'll say Perturbator, but only because I like James more than I like Frank. I'm just kidding. Frank gives me a hard time. Me and James have known each other longer. We're closer. I think they're both incredible songwriters. I don't really know if I could pick a favorite. I like them both for different reasons. You know, James is really good at weaving sounds together really, really smoothly. You know, it's like you don't even realize there's changes happening in the songs. And then Frank, his production, Carpenter Brut's production, is just kind of undeniable. So. Yeah. Yeah, I'll pick Perturbator just because I like him a little bit more as a person.
Yeah. Did you listen to his collaboration with Johannes from Cult of Luna?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was also something.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. When we talk about industrial sounds that you have in your music, of course, let's start with a simple one. Ministry versus Godflesh.
Ministry, 100%.
Okay. It's interesting. A lot of the European guys would always say Godflesh, and on the same page, a lot of Americans always say Ministry. It's interesting. It's just something that I observed over the last couple of years. Uniform versus Pharmacom.
Let's say Uniform.
Mm-hmm. For me as well. Now one that is very easy for me, but I'm not sure if it's easy for you. Youth Coat versus Offer and Punisher.
That is tough. I would say Offer and Punisher. He's so inventive, like his rig. And I know them both, but Tristan is like probably one of the best people I've ever met. He's a really interesting guy.
Yeah,
all the gear he builds is insanely interesting, and he's just kind of awesome. He's nice.
Yeah, he is.
He's respectful. Yeah, he's a really good dude.
For everybody, not that
the people in Youth Coat are.
No. Like, you know, whatever couple I give you, I always like basically all of the people involved. But with Tristan, it's the way Tristan. I approached Tristan like 2 years or 2.5 years ago for an interview. And he immediately, like a few hours later, he said yes. And I wrote him back, but I never got an answer for like, I don't know how long. And then all of a sudden I get an email at a point where I had already forgotten about it. And I get an email and he was like, dude, I forgot about it. Shall we still do it? And I was like, yes. And I think that is something that is I like that a lot. And if anybody then wants to see the interview, it's somewhere in our archives. A lot of people that I've given you are inventors in a way and innovators. And the next two are also innovators in their own right and in their own genre. And I think that both contributed a lot to the development of electronic music and a lot of other genres as well. So you have to choose between Kraftwerk and Throbbing Gristle.
I choose Throbbing Gristle, even though Kraftwerk's undeniable. It is what it is. I like Throbbing Gristle better.
Yeah, and for everybody, I often get like, oh, why do you give them those couples? It's just not that I want them to, or that I want anybody like James here to make another person feel bad, but it's just interesting to see and to find out what they listen to. And it's just a matter of taste, you know? And I can understand why Throbbing Gristle is a little bit more appealing to you. Yes, I do. Something very 80s, Giorgio Moroder versus Harold Faltermeyer.
Giorgio, I gotta give it to the OG, man.
Definitely one of those, right? Would it have been more difficult for you if I had said Giorgio Moroder versus Vangelis?
Yes. But I would probably choose Vangelis. I mean, that is difficult. I mean, Moroder kind of created the beat. Vangelis has all these huge sweeping synths, you know, that are just undeniably fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
So, oh, maybe that's a tie.
Yeah, and both, and also Faltermeyer, they did some incredible soundtrack work, right? Is that something that you would also be interested in doing, like scoring a whole movie of a certain genre or something like that?
I would love to, man. I've had almost opportunities a couple times. It's just like an entirely different thing. You know, you have to have like a different program to sync everything up to the visuals, and I'm a novice at best with that kind of work. But I would love to. I just it's never really come up in a real way.
Would you also like it because of the learning aspect, that you once again learned something new?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm always trying to move forward, trying not to stagnate.
Yeah. Last one. My God, already last one. You have hinted at a certain love for country. And you've mentioned one of the guys. So here again, a little transparency for everybody that's listening. I keep my little diary and I write down stuff while we speak. And that one is because of what James just said. Waylon Jennings versus Johnny Cash.
Waylon, man. Waylon was a hellraiser, bro. He died young, like kind of young. And I just feel like he's more, you know, Johnny Cash is a little bit more rock and a little bit of a way. Waylon is all country, man. He's like, he couldn't tame that guy. Money didn't change him. He was still just a fucking dirtbag.
I guess that Johnny's belief has nothing to do with your choice, right? It's just the music.
Just music. Yeah. Mm. I don't mind what people believe as long as they don't push it upon me. We're all good.
So, James, thanks for all the insight into the new record, into the way you make music, into why you like Vangelis a little bit more than Giorgio Moroder. I hope it was as pleasurable for you as it was for me. Everybody, when you liked this interview, maybe give us a little subscription here on YouTube. Follow us on our socials. You can also, you know, support us a little bit financially. We had we have had a few people donating money via YouTube. I don't know how that works, but our webmaster knows. So cool. You can also support us via Patreon. Whatever you do and whatever you say, or whether you like our stuff here or not, you should listen to Prophecy, to the new record out by Ghost. It's a really, really good record. It's metal, it's synthwave, it is a lot of stuff, and most of all, it's brilliantly layered, and that is something that I love about it. So, James, thank you for the music, and now is your chance for any final last words to our audience.
Be a better person. Try to be nice to each other. You know, don't get too goddamn mad about some insignificant thing that someone else does to you, because you never know what they're going through. Yeah. We're all in this together. There's nobody helping us. So try to be a better person. Just try to be cool.
Thanks for all the time, and enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
Thanks, brother.